This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by CEO and President David Henke. David's going to talk about drug pricing, transparency, a number of issues related to it. David, can you take a moment and introduce yourself, introduce the name of your company, and just tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. A pleasure to be here. David Henke, I'm the President and CEO of Active Radar. We're actually a spin-off company that originally developed from Safeway, the Safeway grocery chain, in an effort to help control healthcare prices and healthcare costs. Active Radar has a solution that looks at reference pricing in the drug care space, which is a unique solution for health plan sponsors and other payers.
Fascinating. Tell us a little bit. You spun off from Safeway. How did you end up in this business yourself personally? How did you get involved in this? And talk to us about reference pricing and what exactly that means.
So I've been in the healthcare space for 30 plus years in a variety of different areas, including both the pharmaceutical market in the health plan side and most recently as a consultant. And so I understand, you know, the dynamics in the market of healthcare and healthcare cost. So reference pricing is actually a solution that has been utilized in a number of different areas, primarily on the medical side and also in the imaging side as a way to help identify and control cost for similar procedures or similar processes.
Thank you. And tell me a little bit about, there's so much discussion about drug prices, and you hear it from drug prices at hospitals, pricing what they spend on pharmaceuticals, and you know, a lot of the time it's not necessarily just the rare disease and the rare pharmaceuticals, but it's the inability to have generics when they need them and have to go to brand name stuff. Give us just a quick overview of the situation with drug prices. Why is this such a hot button issue? Like, I kind of understand why it's a hot button issue, but why is there such a disconnect between the public's perspective, the pharmacy company's perspective, you know, and sort of where we should be on drug prices?
Yeah, so the two big issues from a payer's perspective on drug prices are, one is the cost of specialty drugs. And specialty drugs are usually to treat either a rare or a serious medical condition, and there may only be one or two drugs available for that condition. And that is kind of like the shiny object that a lot of payers or governmental entities look at. The other 50% of the equation is the what you mentioned, the generic drugs or drugs to treat chronic regular conditions. And it could be anything from, you know, hypertension to diabetes to high cholesterol, for example. And the underlying driver economically is that there is no pricing regulation for pharmaceutical pricing in the United States. So the price is set essentially to what the market will bear. And because most unique individuals, most people who have insurance, don't have any direct skin in the game, so to speak, for the cost of a drug, the pharmaceutical manufacturers are free to kind of set the price to what the market will bear. And so that's really what is driving the cost of drugs in the United States.
Now, yeah, help me out on this. If you're a pharmaceutical company who has spent tens of millions to billions to get a drug approved for a rare disease, and there's not a lot of incentive to do the drugs for the rare diseases, you know, and some of the specialty pharmaceuticals are different because they do, it's not just rare, but it's lots of specialty diseases or needs. How do you square the issue of the drug companies think they should be able to charge what the market will bear, and in some cases make what some of us would think are obscene profits from a rare disease drug? And we understand they made a huge investment in it, but at the same time, an individual or insurance company just can't bear that cost. How do you square some of that? And then I'll ask you in a couple moments more about what you guys do.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is the fundamental, you know, economic drivers of what are causing, you know, prices to increase. It does cost billions of dollars to, you know, develop and get approved medications to be brought to the market. There's no question that innovation is a huge component, and we live in a time and an era where we're very fortunate to have unique chemical entities that help treat diseases that were, you know, untreatable in the past. So what is the tipping point, you know, between a drug that costs $100,000 a year or more and not having that treatment? So it's an issue that needs to be kind of addressed, maybe on a policy basis. And other countries around the world have looked at what is the therapeutic benefit of having these types of treatments available.
Got it. And then in terms of what Active Radar, what exactly does your company do with respect to this? And who is your sort of customer or client?
So we're really looking at the drugs that are the non-specialty drugs, the lower cost drugs, and looking at where there is therapeutic interchangeability or therapeutic equivalence between drugs that treat the most common medical conditions. And I mentioned previously, you know, hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes. There are many drugs that have been available and have been approved by the FDA that are considered to be interchangeable and therapeutically equivalent to either, you know, lower your cholesterol or to control your diabetes or hypertension. And so we've identified 65 different therapeutic categories of drugs, non-specialty drugs, that some people would call me-too drugs, therapeutically equivalent drugs. And we've identified that there are actually a tremendous amount of price variation between these medications. And our recommendation actually is to look at the lowest cost therapeutically equivalent drug in these categories and make a recommendation that the plan sponsor or the insurance company set that as the reimbursement price for that specific drug. And then the doctor, the prescriber, and the patient have the opportunity to have a discussion saying that, is this low-cost alternative therapeutically appropriate for me? And if so, the plan sponsor will reimburse that drug at the patient's copay. So it's a reference pricing solution that looks at a drug dose level for the specific patient and makes a recommendation on what the reimbursement will be. And if the patient decides, or the doctor decides that it's not appropriate, an exception can be made, and then the patient will continue on their same therapy.
Thank you. And just so I further understand what you all do, are you consult with the payers? Do you have sort of a subscription product for the payers? How do you work in this environment? What does Active Radar do within this? I certainly understand that the concept is, look, you've got a generic, non-generic, you've got 13 different drugs, 12 of them are therapeutically equivalent. Let's, you know, gravitate towards the one that's the least expensive, but they're therapeutically equivalent. And then Right. Who do you work for? How do you guys work?
So we work with payers, plan sponsors, employers, trust funds, governmental entities, health plans. So anybody who's like the would be considered the payer or the insurance provider who's actually, you know, paying the cost of the medications. Those are our customers. Those are our target folks that we work with directly. Our target market is entities that are self-insured. And we're looking at, you know, larger organizations that have at least 10,000 covered lives, and we're able to provide a solution that will actually reduce their pharmacy spend by up to, you know, 15% to 25% by implementing our reference pricing solution. So it's a highly dynamic, very complex from both a clinical and an operational standpoint, but extraordinarily effective in lowering their overall cost trend for their healthcare spend.
Got it.
And the title Active Radar, now that I hear what you're saying, you keep a radar on all these different drugs, therapeutic equivalents. You actively watch it. It's dynamic. It changes regularly. Payers either buy that one or plan sponsor buys that on a subscription basis so that they can understand, so they constantly look at this, or is it more of a consultative type product?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we typically enter into, you know, a contract with a plan sponsor or an entity for between 3 and 5 years. Our fees are based on a per member per month basis, and our ROI for our cost versus the amount of money that we save is usually in the range of an 8-to-1 ROI ratio. So, you know, we charge a minimal monthly fee, but the plan savings is really dramatic in terms of, you know, our ability to actually lower the overall healthcare spend that an entity has.
Fabulous. And so a follow-up question, and again, you're really talking less about the rare specialty drugs and more about this issue that I just really the last few years really understood from talking to hospital chief pharmacy people and vice presidents of pharmacy, how much of the cost comes from just having to use the non-generic at certain times, or in this case, a therapeutically equivalent but very expensive drug because they're out of the generics. When someone goes to the pharmacy, and I know this is a very micro issue, there will be times where someone like me will pick up the Claritin versus the CVS or Walgreens brand, or we'll pick up the Flonase versus the generic brand. Why do people do that? Are we just trained to do that? Are we just marketed to the wherewithals to do that? Do we go with the brand, even though we know we could save $7 on the non-brand? Why do people do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think there is a lot of, you know, brand equity that the pharmaceutical manufacturers have brought into the space. I mean, obviously there's quite a bit of advertising and brand awareness that builds brand allegiance in the marketplace. But the real issue is that most large employers who have, you know, covered pharmacy benefits, about 80 to 85% of all of the prescriptions that they cover are generically available. And so, you know, our program really looks at what the price delta is in the generic market. In fact, our recommended therapeutic switches are switching people from a high-cost generic to a low-cost generic about 45% of the time. So because the market is unregulated in terms of pricing, generic drugs are also very expensive as well. I mean, their brand name equivalents are much more expensive, but there is a huge variation in the cost of generic drugs in the marketplace, which is really kind of unknown by not only the consumer, but also the prescriber as well. So 40, 45% of the time, our recommended switches are from one generic to another generic, which, you know, which is a lower cost alternative.
Got it. I have another question for you. I'm not sure if it's right in your bailiwick or not. In the last decade, it seems that there's been this huge growth in this sort of supplement business, the business of selling pseudo pharmaceuticals, you know, of all sorts to people, with the concept that this supplement, that supplement will operate to help your cholesterol, help to help you sleep better, do all the kinds of things that FDA-approved drugs do. And sometimes when I hear people speak about, you know, whatever the supplement of the day is that people are raving about, it seems like I'm back to the 1800s where people are selling snake oil. What's the deal with this whole development, this huge supplement industry? And is it really sort of unregulated, or how does that work exactly?
It's absolutely unregulated, and I think snake oil is probably the best terminology that could be labeled to it as well. It is unregulated. As long as the company doesn't make an absolute claim that it's curing or treating a condition, there's a lot of leeway in terms of marketing these types of products, and you're right. It could be anything from, you know, losing weight to helping you sleep better to improving, you know, your mood. But again, this is this is a segment of the industry that is unregulated, and the FDA has very little authority to actually do anything about it if they're careful with their marketing messages.
Got it. I've just watched this evolve, and I get different people and constant claims that this or that is the thing, is the new thing that's going to solve this or that issue. And it harkens back to just everything you learned about the 1800s and snake oil salespeople selling these kinds of things. Well, David, I have to tell you, just fascinating to talk to you and about what you do. It sounds like a very disciplined approach to trying to reduce drug spend, which is a critical issue for every health system, for payers, for any self-funded employer, really for anybody trying to save dollars in healthcare. So just a critical topic. David, lastly, how can people reach you or learn more about Active Radar if they want to learn more about you?
So a couple things. So our website, activeradar.com, will give an overview of what we do and what solutions we provide. In addition, there's, you know, our program has been vetted academically through an article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in August 2017, and also a follow-up article is going to be published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, on February 5th, that actually deeply evaluates, you know, the cost effectiveness from an economic standpoint of what our platform does and how it actually saves a plan sponsor money. So you know, we have some, you know, real life validation of what we do, both from a practical standpoint and an academic standpoint, that shares our story. So those are the two ways to kind of, you know, look and research at what we do and what our success and results have been.
Well, David, I so appreciate you, your team, giving us the opportunity to visit with you. What a pleasure. And I feel like I learned a lot today, and that's, I always read that as a key litmus test, and I appreciate your time so much. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you, Scott. Pleasure.